Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us, of course, live on a Friday morning as we broadcast during the week and also our weekend schedule as well. He is, of course, his own website is themediabeat.us. He is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And I woke up this morning thinking we were going to talk about something else, but we have a topic that our man who is not in the media capital of the world can talk about. Good morning, David. How are you?
Well, hello. Yes, I'm not reporting into you from the media capital of the world. I happen to be in the great state of Maine. In a way, it may be an attempt to shift eastward. I'm on the eastern seaboard, about as far eastward as you can get on the coast of Maine, looking across the Atlantic at my old home country, and I'm quite happy to serve as your Britain correspondent for the moment, because that's where the big media news is coming out of right now. We now have, just to use a quaint old British phrase, a fortnight until 14 days, that is, a fortnight until the Prime Minister Theresa May actually does finally step down. She's actually announced her resignation on June 7th.
Now, does this, as a layperson sitting out there might ask, does which way does this affect Brexit?
Does this make any difference?
Yeah, that's the whole question. Will it make any difference?
Well, the answer to that is, will it make any difference? Many things will change, of course, with a different prime minister. Will it make any difference to Brexit? I think that's the main question at the heart of everybody's concern, including your own, I'm sure. It can. It can absolutely make a difference. There are only about 160 days left before... Oh, I know deadlines don't seem to mean anything in Brexit. Excuse me, finally, when it gets down to it. But there is a hard deadline now for Brexit. We're supposed to be out by Halloween. It's such a significant date to have as a deadline in this general horror show that's been going on over 2 years now. But there are ways to get out of Brexit. I mean, there are ways to get out of Europe, as Brexit demands that we do. And there are neat ways and there are messy ways. And depending on who's in charge, the choice of who becomes in charge to follow Theresa May will make a difference to that. The front runner at the moment is the man that I know Jill likes to refer to as Bojo, the favored shortening that many UK newspapers are using for him now, Boris Johnson, Bojo. He's in terms of public opinion polls for the leadership, he's in the lead with 40%, and his nearest fellow runner is way behind at only 13%. A lot of attention is focusing on him, and he's the kind of individual that I think people can envisage pushing through Brexit without a deal, without a set of arrangements, without a divorce agreement, in other words, and in other words, in the most messy fashion imaginable. And if that's what people want on the Tory side, that's what they can get. But there's a lot of concern about that, too. I mean, remember that... I guess the most important thing to say for an overseas audience about the British Tory party is that it is absolutely the Tory of business. At least historically speaking, that's true. And for always, it has been the party that represents the business community. And the business community at the moment is terrified of a messy Brexit, as you can imagine. The leading lobbyists for the business community are known as the Confederation of British Industry, and they are going apoplectic now about the possibility of a messy Brexit organized by someone like Boris Johnson. There is no one like Boris Johnson. What they mean is you know, we're really concerned about what's going to happen to the British economy. under Boris Johnson. That's what they mean. And Boris Johnson, curiously, for any Conservative Party leader, doesn't seem too concerned about that. He's in that generation of people who like to move fast and break things. To talk about the Silicon Valley community in this country, there's a swathe of British politicians who follow that same principle, and he's certainly a man who is not renowned for thoughtful actions. He tends to shoot from the hip. And one notable thing in this context to remember is that just a few months ago, when he had this concern of the British business community put to him forcibly, he reportedly said, "Screw business." Except, and I should report, I suppose, bearing in mind that I'm on a family radio program, that he didn't use the word screw. He used an expletive beginning with F. But that's not the sort of thing you normally hear from conservatives. So he's a populist. He has a populist following. And essentially, as political analysts look at his chances now, we confront the simple distinction that's got to be made about the kinds of support that Boris Johnson has. He's got enormous name recognition amongst the public as a whole, and of course amongst rank and file members of the Conservative Party in the shires, as they say, out in the country. But he's not so popular amongst the members of Parliament, who are an important bloc when it comes to choosing their leader. Indeed, you know, they are choosing the leader of the party in Parliament. All the candidates for this leadership position have to be members of Parliament. That's part of the constitution when it comes to the leadership and the leadership context. So that's the essential divide. But you know, in the face of that split, Johnson is certainly working hard to bring over members of Parliament who have not been on his side until now. He's been waging a very energetic campaign to convince even Remainers, people who actually do want, and there are lots of them in the Conservative Party, and more of them in Parliament, as members of Parliament, than you might imagine, considering the force with which they've been trying to get Brexit proposals through Parliament, and failing, of course, mainly because there is a split, as there is for every party except the actual out-and-out Brexiteers, who now have their own party. But the Conservative Party is rent asunder, doesn't know which way to jump. But Boris is trying to persuade even the ones who want to remain in Europe to jump towards him for the sake of party unity.
Now, for Americans that don't know, this doesn't lead to a general snap election. This really, the controlling party gets to appoint the new prime minister, right?
That's right. I mean, constitutionally speaking, the Queen is the person who selects the person to lead the government. The way it happens is that she will call from amongst the members of Parliament who are the party with the largest number of members of Parliament to the palace it's usually Buckingham Palace she's at when she does the calling. She'll call that person into the palace and say, please, given that you control most seats in Parliament, you are the person that I turn to first to form a new government. And in this case, that basic picture of the Conservatives having most seats in Parliament will remain the same, whoever the leader of the party is. Now, in terms of the optics and the political realities of the situation, I think a new leader of the Conservative Party inheriting the prime ministership will feel obliged to go to the country, as they say in England, to hold an election pretty soon, just to ensure that they do have the confidence of the country and be able to demonstrate that they do have the confidence of the country too. But it's not an immediate constitutional necessity. No.
Now, what a messy Brexit to me. You've got possible results here of the trade war that the U.S. is deeply embroidered with China, and with Brexit, those two things combined really will put a strain on the world economy.
Well, they just knocked off some. Yeah. We should probably mention British Steel. You there?
Go ahead. Okay. Mention British Steel.
It went into administration at the midweek. You know, the thing that is fascinating, if you're weird, is that this is what everybody's watching. This slow motion car crash. Bojo has been, this has been going on now for how many months, where they have basically been peeling the skin off Mrs. May. By the way, it's a game for everybody, and that's the business.
The slow flailing, yeah. Uh-huh.
But the long short is that this has been brewing for quite some time. And
and she made it very clear earlier this year that she would be leaving. Now all that's changed really is she's put a definite date on it, and it is before any arrangement is arrived at for leaving Brexit. So she's basically handing the poison chalice over to her successor. She's given up this thankless fight that she's been involved in.
And she's done it in a way, I think that's a really good image, because she's literally passing, it's like right here. But she is remaining in a position as a caretaker while they simply, while this fight, I should say, is taken public. And that's, by public,
sure.
I mean, publicly in Parliament, not to the country, but it's now, it's like, all right, we're buying
to the party as a whole. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
uh-huh. Whilst still remaining in power for the moment. So there's that. And then there is the array of actual issues, which is why I mentioned British Steel going into administration. And, it's like, all right, great. But that's kind of huge. Not to say.
But it's symptomatic, yes, of a very, very. British Steel was an export leader for many of its long years of history. At one point, it was a nationalised industry. This was when the Labour government, the Socialist Party of Britain, was in power, and they felt it was so important, one of the commanding heights of the economy, as it's called in Marxist ideology. That industry had to be nationalized, brought under government ownership, in other words. And it functioned in that form for a long time. Then it was privatized, part of the general sweep of privatization of public institutions that were a hallmark of the Margaret Thatcher years. And still, even bringing itself, into being brought into the hurly-burly of naked commercial competition, it still couldn't make a hack of it. And as you say, now it's in a form of bankruptcy now, and has given up that fight. It's a symptom of the state of the British economy in many ways. It's seen that way. It's highly symbolic, but it's an indicator that all is not well, and you can see why the Confederation of British Industry is so concerned to make sure that if there is to be Brexit, and that's the accepted truth now, there needs to be a Brexit, because that's the way every force in Parliament since the referendum, on the Conservative side at least, has been pushing it. But there are, of course, Remainers. It is a messy thing, with Remainers still active and still hoping that they can change the tide and reverse it. But as it goes forward, if indeed it continues to go forward, and every sign amongst the Conservatives at least is that it will, It's the other parties, of course, who are bringing up the idea of perhaps having another referendum and all those other possibilities that make you sort of grit your teeth and say, what else can get more complicated in this situation? But the general drift is towards Brexit, and the effort now amongst the Tories certainly is to try to make it as tidy as they can, even in while the forces of messiness seem to be in the ascendant.
So I've got two other questions around that. One here is about Article 50. Are there ways to delay it? Are there ways to bring it back? The answer is, of course, but would anyone bother? That's A. And B, you can answer whatever you want. No, because the way... Go on. Are you there?
We're having a little communication difficulty, I think, but yeah. I'm here. I'm hoping you're hearing me.
Yes.
The Article 50, the basis on which the constitutional basis for under which Britain negotiates its way out is, of course, the bedrock of finding whatever arrangement ends up being the arrangement that is adhered to as Britain leaves Europe. Now, whether it's possible to renegotiate that or perhaps even scrap its applicability altogether is always possible. And we may find ourselves down the road as we get towards this supposed drop-dead deadline of Halloween, that we might find Article 50 up in question all over again. It's possible, but unlikely. I think after 2 years of sweating through this exercise and trying to get it right, the British public have no patience for further kicking of the can down the road. They want this matter settled.
And do they?
And of course, you know, everybody who's asked about it says, of course we want it settled. But as always, on whose terms is the vital question.
Right. And then there are tactics. But do you think that there is any particular desire to have another referendum? I mean, I know it's thrown around, but the tricky thing about referendums...
Oh, sure. There's a growing impetus for that to be put on the table. I mean, it's on the table for several parties now, just not the party in power. And the Labour Party are interesting. Well, like all parties, except for the ones who are mobilized entirely by the single issue, all existing and traditional parties are divided on the question of leaving Europe. And the Labour Party has got its own split between pro-European and anti-Europeans too. But I think that they're moving towards the idea. I mean, in as much as you can get any sort of gargantuan organization like the Labour Party to be said to be moving in any one direction. But there is an openness now to calling another referendum that there wasn't before. It's got a greater momentum behind it than has been evident since 2016. So we could. I mean, and there are marches and there are demonstrations and increasingly obvious and clear statements from, you know, a large body in the British public as a whole who say, well, give us a chance to have our second thoughts.
Which will be, you know, again, I go to Australia for one quick second, and I will just say, which will be interesting. And the reason that I say that is because apparently everybody or every journalist in the free world and possibly the unfree world was certain of an outcome of an election because it had been polling a certain way since mid-2016. Catch those mid-2016. Sound familiar? When did Brexit happen? That didn't materialize that way, and you know, we all know about the doom to repeat it department. Sorry, say again.
Absolutely, increasingly in this world political climate of the moment, we have to be prepared for surprises. There's no getting away from that. I don't think we can predict anything with any confidence anymore in Europe or in the United States or even, it seems, in the Antipodes.
But does it have to be a bombshell each time? Anyway, I digress because we've got a short period of time. Sensational.
Well, if you're talking to a media person.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right.
You're talking to a media commentator here. Yes, let's calm the terminology.
How down, many bombshells can there be in a 24-hour
period? Before there's nothing left. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
There's nothing left to bomb. In the words of a legendary general, there's nothing left to bomb.
Le jour après. All right, and then just. Because, again, I can see Marshall. Oh, we've got 4 minutes. Great. I'm just going to get hooked anyway. But where do the elections that are taking place as we speak, the European parliamentary elections, where do they fit into this whole thing?
Well, in Britain, they're likely to, you know, deliver the exquisite irony or, you
Mr.
might
Milkshake?
Say, the complete confusion. the new form of British protest, throwing milkshakes at their leader, the leaders that they don't like. Let's try and avoid predicting things too cleverly, because you can always get it wrong. But a very possible outcome of the European elections for Britain itself is that the very party formed in support of the whole idea of Brexit, a newly formed party by the Nigel Farage, the man who in a sense created the Brexit movement in the first place, through a rather traditional right-wing, you might even say quasi-fascist party called the United Kingdom Independence Party. He's now out of that, but he's leading a small, well, what seemed at first to be a small party, with only one platform, which is to get Brexit fixed and get us out of, get Britain out of Europe. That party, ironically enough, will end up doing very well in European elections. And there's an irony for you, as I say. So that will sort of spice up the British political scene with yet more evidence that you have this populist wave that is anti-Brussels, because that's essentially what this is all about in the end. It's about the idea that we just don't like those foreigners over there in Brussels, which is thought of as the capital of Europe. It's an administrative capital, but that's the sort of basic line of xenophobia that this entire issue has actually been based upon.
So that's, you know, that's, as you say, exquisite irony. And if people, there was a song many, many years ago, isn't it ironic? And people don't know still what irony is, but this should be fun. And it would be pretty hilarious. I mean, just as a cherry on the whipped cream of this week, if it does go down that way.
Yes, to have major victory for the anti-Europeans in the European elections. Yes.
You know what people say in the barn? I can't use the word, but you can't make this up. Thank you very much, David Terry. The Media Beat.